You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Gas Show and Tinnitus Blues. My name is Steve Lippman. I am with only Dan Volpone. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing good.
What we are doing right now, Dan and I are talking on Locker Room. The room is sold out. It's going great so far. We're doing this, we're going to talk about the Pelicans and the Sixers tonight and other Sixers stuff that comes up. But we're also multitasking because we're watching our co-host Emily get married. We're watching the live stream that she shared with us, and we're just keeping an eye on everything. It's a small ceremony, and we will of course keep you posted when Emily is there, because if we start crying, that's why. And that's it. Dan, how are you feeling? Emily's about to get married in a matter of minutes. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. That's very weird. I think she might be my first friend to get married, which, like, I think sounds kind of crazy, but also I'm only 22. So this is very interesting. I'm very happy for her, though.
Extremely happy for her. And so, yeah, you know, as you're listening to this in the podcast version, we'll just give you periodic updates, and we'll let you know what's going on. But in the meantime, the Sixers are happening, and the game that we haven't talked about is that they played the Knicks. We're going to get to the Pelicans game, which is tonight, but they played the Knicks, and Dan, I think you covered the Liberty Ballers Twitter account, or no, I'm sorry, the Celtics. Listen,
yes.
I had a bit of a long lunch, thirsty lunch. We're going to keep going.
Steve's drunk.
Yeah, man, it really got away from me. the Sixers played the Celtics. Dan, how did you feel watching that game against the Celtics? What were your big takeaways from that one?
I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I think that the takeaways were easy, which is, like, you know, I guess, you know, we handled the Celtics fine last year in the regular season. We went 3-1, won the first three, lost the last one. But in the playoffs, we didn't have it. And I'm not going to do the whole thing where it's like, oh, but if Ben had played, it would have been different. I think that, you know, when it came playoff time last year, we, you know, they played up to it and we didn't. And it definitely feels the opposite of that this year. It doesn't feel like this is just a regular season thing, you know. Watching these teams, the Sixers pretty clearly feel like the better team by a lot. And it's just awesome. Like, I feel like the Celtics have been killing the Sixers as long as I've been super into the Sixers, you know, growing up. And I never know how to say this word. I think it's pronounced Schadenfreude.
I think so.
But it's a tough one. But I was just going through Celtics blog. You know, they do great content over there, except I hate the Celtics. So,
right.
But, you know, they do very good work. And we've had them on the pod before. And just, you know, reading them talk about, you know, which the obvious thing, which is that they can't stop Embiid. But it's just so lovely to hear the Celtics be upset that they can't stop Embiid. Listening to Brad Stevens talk about it. You know, Joel had 35. It was the fewest he scored against them all year. And we swept them in the season series.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was just any win over the Celtics is great, but watching Joel be the guy that kills him was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, quickly, you mentioned about the playoff series last year, and people will, I don't think they do this anymore, but at the time, at least, they would say with the caveat that, like, well, Ben was out, so you never know. But, like, they did have a full season to play, and they were the sixth seed. So it's not like the Sixers were firing on all cylinders, and then Simmons got hurt and they lost to the Celtics. You know,
well, I
think last season was cooked, you know, for a long time.
Well, absolutely. And like, this is like, not to harp on last season, I'm perfectly happy to put it behind me after, you know, how well they're playing now and how horrible last year was to watch. But I want to say it was like, the Sixers were the sixth seed, right? And of the top five seeds in the East, the Sixers lost the season series to four of them. They beat the Celtics in the season series, and then they split against the top six in the West, like 1-1. And then I think they got swept by the Mavs, who were the seven. So I think there was like this narrative last year that was like, you know, the Sixers were, you know, they were losing the games they should win, and they were beating the tough teams. And that's like the counter argument to like, well, let's pay attention to like how the Sixers play against the good teams. But I think that, you know, it just doesn't really bear out with how they actually did. And if you look at, you know, some of the bigger games, you know, we beat the Celtics three times. We beat the Bucks on Christmas Day. And so basically the Christmas Day game and any Celtics game are, you know, the games that are memorable. They're the games you want to win the most.
Yeah.
And then the Heat blowout, which was the first game against the Heat, where they had the, you know,
the Josh Richardson hit six threes. Yeah.
Right, and it was the Mike Scott Hive tailgate, so there were a lot of, like, you know, Sixers internet people at that game in person. I was there in person. And so a lot of the memorable games against good teams, the Sixers won, but I don't think it's true that they really were just beating up on the good teams last year, and then all of a sudden in the playoffs, it was like, if only we had Ben. I think that this was something that you could have seen coming.
I will, listen, in terms of the live stream, here's where we're at. Jordy, the groom, he looks excellent. Is standing on the altar with his two guys next to him. And then Emily's, I believe, co-maids of honor are there, standing there. And they are waiting for the host of the Gastroenteritis Blues to get to the altar.
I think that's how
That's literally what the – I want to say rabbi, but it's not going to be a rabbi. What that person is going to say is going to say –
She's not Jewish, dude.
She's not Jewish. That's a real shame.
It is.
So, yeah, anyway, the Sixers-Celtics game, Joel looked great, you know, against Minnesota. It seemed like he was working his way back, but he still shot a million free throws, and he ended up shooting 20 free throws against Boston, and they just had absolutely no answer. I mean, they went to Taco Fall. They tried Robert Williams. They tried Mo Wagner even came out there for a few minutes. You know, they tried everything on Joel and they just had no answer. And, you know, Tristan Thompson wasn't playing, but Joel kills him too. I just think that the Celtics are not unique in that they are like in many matchups around the league that, that Joel just overwhelms them. And he's so smart and he knows exactly how to get to the free throw line. Joel made 16 of 20 free throws and he was disappointed in himself because he feels like he should be a 90% free throw shooter. Dan, do you have an update?
Oh, here comes Emily.
Here comes Emily.
She's got a long thing on her head, but I don't know what that's called.
That is a call in if you know what that is called. What do they call that flowy thing? This is so exciting. She looks great. There are, Dan, is that a chicken or a rooster? What do you think?
I think the one on the left is a chicken, and then the other one is something else. I don't know. I don't know my farm animals.
I don't know them either, but I love it's really setting the scene. And now they're at the altar and they're going to begin with the marriage part of this ceremony. Anyway, anything else?
The whole thing's a wedding.
Anything else from the Celtics game? I'm trying to think of anything. Who was the Sixers' second best player in the Celtics game? Who are you most impressed by except for Joel in that game?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, it would have to be Danny Green, right? He was hitting. I mean, he's been shooting well all year, but I thought that game especially, he was hitting all kinds of tough shots. He was early on a big part of why they pulled ahead, and you know, they ended up never looking back from that lead when they went on. I want to say it was a ridiculous run. It was like 21-2, and like
yeah.
At one point. And Danny Green was a huge part of that. And you know, he got off to a slow start. I know some people were a little frustrated with him, but he's been so good lately. He had 17 points. He was 5 of 6 from 3. He's just been exactly like, if you imagine the player you hoped you were getting in that trade, you know, peak Danny Green, he's been playing beyond that lately. Defensively, I think he's looked better than he did to start the year. And shooting wise, he's, after a slow start, he's now over 40%. He only shot 33% from three last year. That was, I think, the bigger concern than the D coming in was like, you know, is he just older and he's not going to shoot as well, or is he going to be able to bring it back? He's been incredible lately.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Sixers' fourth best player sort of changes night to night. I think it just depends on who's hot or who's playing a big role. You know, some nights I think it's Shake, because Shake will go off and get you 20 points. Or I think eventually once George Hill is ready to play, which I think, you know, he provided that. But that he's still, you know, rehabbing that thumb. It could be George Hill. It could be Seth Curry, of course. You know, I think the Sixers have a lot of options there. But Danny Green's been great. Anyway, moving on to tonight's game. The Sixers are playing the Pelicans this evening at 8 o'clock. How do you feel about this game? I mean, the Pelicans just played the Nets and got killed by them the other night. We have Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball are both questionable for the game, so we're unsure of where they'll be at. But, of course, the big test is Zion. What do you think? How, you know, the Sixers are on the road. How do you feel about this game overall?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. I mean, I you know, earlier this week I picked the Sixers to lose, but that was because – you know, I was guessing, you know, oh, maybe they sit Joel on one of the halves of the back-to-back. Maybe right. It'll be this one. I definitely didn't think that, you know, Lonzo and Brandon Ingram would be questionable. So I think if they're out, it'll be a pretty tough game for the Pelicans. Either way, you know, if Joel's in, I feel good about the Sixers. But I'm really interested to see, I hope Ben guards Zion. And if so, I'm interested to see how that goes. I think that, you know, there's a lot of guys that Ben really dominates defensively. You know, like she basically shut down Luka in a way that you don't see anyone do. He really is. He really is talented. But Zion's weird. You know, like I don't think Luka's just. He's extremely talented, but I don't think he plays in an extremely unique way. You know, I guess he's not super quick and he's very skilled, but he doesn't do anything that's crazy. And Ben can basically smother him. Whereas,
especially athletically, you know, Ben over Luka can really stick with him.
And Zion is different. I mean, because Zion is, I guess, you know, I never saw Barkley, but he seems, you know, he's that, got that short, stocky, fast, strong, jumps high, you know, and Ben is athletic, but he doesn't usually guard a player that's going to play as physically as Zion does. Because Zion's just going to run through him. And Ben's going to have to hold his ground. Ben's going to have to try to block the shot. Ben's taller. Ben's longer. So, I'm excited to see, you know, how he does on him. There's really not a player like Zion. So Ben hasn't really had a chance to, you know, try to lock in on a player like Zion. And I'm excited to see, you know, I'm confident in Ben. Ben is, you know, one of the best defenders in the league, if not the best perimeter defender. Maybe Thibel. But I'm excited to see how he does on him. I think, you know, he's strong enough, but he doesn't always play super physical, so I think it'll be an interesting test for Ben. But it should just be I mean, Zion's a ton of fun to watch, and he basically gets wherever he wants on the floor just by running through guys, getting to the rim. Gobert couldn't stop him, so I'm excited to see what Ben can do with him.
You know, the only thing that I can think of as similar to playing against Zion, and Zion just gets to the rim at will, and he finishes everything, and his true shooting is great, and it's a real challenge. The only thing I can really think of is Giannis, who the Sixers have had to play and who, you know, in the past, the Sixers have put a beat on him. Now, Giannis is a little different in that Giannis is a legit probably 11 or 7 feet and 6'10".
He's taller than he's listed and Zion's shorter than he's listed.
Right. Zion is probably a real, around 6'6 or so, but he's very thick and very athletic and
exactly
super strong. But do you think that the Sixers will try and beat on him at any point? I mean, clearly it's going to be a multiple person job because he gets to the rim so much. So it's going to be on Joel partially, you know, when he breaks through that first line of defense. But do you think that there's any chance that they put a center like Embiid on him and just dare him to shoot like they would with Giannis? Or is he too quick for that?
I guess, you know, it's a possibility. I don't think they will. I think that it's such an illogical starting point that they just won't do it in, you know, an initial matchup with Zion. But I mean, Embiid's so much taller than him that it kind of looks ridiculous. And Zion is definitely, I mean, I know percentage wise, you know, Giannis isn't always as bad as he looks, but I'm sorry, Giannis just cannot shoot. And Zion's shot looks so much better than Giannis's.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I don't think you want, you know, you don't want to, obviously you would be content with Zion taking a three as compared to, you know, getting all the way to the rim like he can with some players. But I think when you have such a talented perimeter defender like Ben Simmons, you know, if I would try him first, I wouldn't put Embiid on there and have to try to draw Embiid out. I mean, Zion doesn't take a lot of threes. He's only taking half a three a game. I guess he's really taking a three every other game because he's not taking half a three in any game.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But he's shooting them at 37.5%. Last year, he shot him at 42.9%. So he's the kind of guy where he, you know, I don't think, and it's probably smart when you're that good at getting to the rim. I wish Giannis shot less. But when Zion shoots, I have a lot more confidence than it's going in than when Giannis does. And I think for that reason, you don't want to just neglect him out there, and you definitely don't want to pull Joel all the way from the basket. So I think, you know, if he's in and Adams is in at the same time, there's no reason to not have Joel on Adams just to, you know, fight for rebounds and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, there are two things that probably nullify that option for the Sixers. One, like you just mentioned, is Adams, and that he can be a real nuisance on the offensive rebounds. And, you know, if you put Joel on Zion, then who exactly can box out Adams? I mean, Tobias is strong and can do that on some guys like Marcus Sol, but I think Adams is probably a different thing where you'd probably rather have Joel just stick around him, and then he can really just stay at the rim because you're not.
And he went to Pitt.
Adams went to Pitt.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen him around on as like an alumni?
No, I don't think he really enjoyed his time here from what I've heard. But you know, here's the thing though. He joins a great crowd of me and Keith Pompey, so.
He does. We need to get him on the pod the same way we got Keith on the pod.
That's right.
So the other thing about this, you know, as you talk about the Joel thing, is that Joel's, you know, what, two games back from injury now? And I think they're definitely not eager to, like, throw him on Zion running around everywhere. So I think it'll definitely be Ben's, you know, if not Ben, this is not a Matisse matchup. You know, Matisse can really run around on a lot of guys that Ben can take, like Beal or Zach LaVine. You know, do you think if it's not Ben, it's basically up to Tobias to, you know, when Ben, if ever Ben is sitting and Zion's on the court, do you think that the matchup basically falls to Tobias?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could. I wouldn't be shocked if they tried Matisse on him. I don't think it's a great idea. But yeah, I think, I mean, for the most part, though, it's going to have to be a few guys. Like, it's going to need help. The only Sixer who I have any confidence in sticking with Zion, you know, from the perimeter and, you know, absorbing him just driving straight into them is Ben. You know, obviously Matisse is fantastic defensively, but he's not that strong. And so I think if Ben's not out there and Zion is, I guess, first of all, I would make the point that I would try to make sure Ben's out there when Zion is.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, if Zion's out there without Ben, I think that you could throw a number of guys at him. It could be Tobias. Tobias, I think, is the most logical guy to do it. But even, you know, if, you know, Matisse and Danny Green are basically running at him and you know, trying to swipe at the ball when he starts to drive, because, you know, both of them are, you know, solid at getting their hands in. I think that's going to be a huge part of it as well. Also, Emily's very close to being married.
I know. So just to give you an update, Emily and Jordy are at the altar. It looks like there's a ring that is now in play. The gentleman who is not a rabbi is talking, and they're talking, and lots of talking going on. No smooches yet, but when a smooch happens, we know that it's done. And there'll be clapping and, they're doing the rings right now, folks. They're doing the rings at this very moment. I believe this is Jordy getting his ring on right now. There are photographers everywhere. The only thing about Matisse guarding Zion, this is really back and forth. The only thing about Matisse guarding Zion is it really would be the Sixers just daring him to dribble around Matisse. And I think that that's probably an interesting sort of gadget sort of thing to give a shot to if Zion's having his way or something. But I think other than that, you know, Zion's just too big to be guarded by Matisse. I wanted to ask you about Matisse. It seems pretty widely acknowledged that he's an incredible defender and like he's completely consistent this year defensively. You know, it doesn't seem like he gets played off the floor and makes dumb fouls or dumb rotations as much as he did last year. Will he be on an all defense team?
I don't know. I guess that kind of thing comes down to minutes in some ways. I think he deserves to be. I mean, I know there's all kinds of advanced metrics that basically show him as the best perimeter defender, if not the best defender in the league. And we're talking, and I don't think that, if the Sixers are going to have a dog in the fight for defensive player of the year, then I think it should be Ben. Ben's guarding the best player every night. I think, he's a huge part of the team's defense, but Matisse is extremely talented, and we've talked about this before, but yes, he's been better offensively, especially lately. He's shooting the three better. He looks more comfortable dribbling the ball. But defensively, last year he was good. Like, he made a lot of plays, but he, like you said, he made some dumb fouls pretty often. He gambled a lot and got beat a lot by good players. And he's not doing that nearly as much this year. To the point where it's not just he's a good young defender or even a great young defender and a good defender. He is now an elite defender in the NBA. I think that he is playing enough to deserve consideration for being on an all defense team. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if he picks up more minutes going forward in the rotation. So especially then, I think he belongs on an all defense team. If he can start, to get up to, even like 25, 30 minutes a game, with especially if they start cutting the rotation down. Oh, they're married.
Oh my God, we've got a kiss.
Wow.
Oh my God, they're married. Oh my
That's
God.
crazy. Good for
Oh my
Emily.
God, they're married. All because of this podcast. It's unbelievable that we
I've
did
heard
that.
that they wouldn't have gotten married if it wasn't for you and
I
I.
was just reading that. Yeah. Wow. Now they're walking out. Emily is smiling. Jordy is smiling. They're swinging their arms. What
Oh.
a wonderful, wonderful thing that couldn't have happened without us. Wow. Congratulations to them.
Congrats, Emily and Jordy.
Love you, Emily. This is very exciting. And now people in the crowd. Emily's, hey, Emily's waving at us. Wow. Wow. I just saw, I don't know if we don't have the sound on, but I just saw her mouth rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. Well, that's really nice of her. Congratulations to them. What an unbelievable thing. That was really cool. We were talking about Matisse. I don't know what the voters will do with him because I certainly think that his impact and his talent is worthy of the second team. You know, I would be shocked if he was on the first team. But I wonder if they take into account that he's coming off the bench and by virtue of that, he's not always playing against the starters of the best competition. But I think he always holds up, you know, next to the best players. So I wonder what's going to happen there. I wrote a piece the other day for Liberty Ballers about basically about Dwight and backup centers and how I'm just really not worried about it, about how that's not something I'm super worried about. I was looking up the stats about the different lineups. Everybody knows that the Ben and Matisse and Dwight lineup is terrible. The Ben and Joel and Matisse lineup is unbelievable. They are
Unreal.
like plus 26. I'm going to pull this up so that I get it right, but they are a giant plus with Ben and Matisse and Joel. And I think that just has to do with like Joel's offensive versatility combined with Ben and Matisse on the floor wreaking havoc. And I think it's pretty hard to overcome for other teams. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, I also think there's something to be said about like the comfort Ben and Matisse have when they're together and with Joel. I mean, because that's, three really high-end defenders out there. Plus, Joel can cover for guys. So I think those lineups, and I don't
They're
have.
plus 26. It's only 78 minutes, but they're plus 26.
Right. And I mean, and it's only 78 minutes, but I think that, a lot of fans can imagine, a lot of plays from these lineups because there's a lot of fast breaks.
Right.
Just imagine them out there together. You know, I can't remember a specific play, but I just remember watching them together. And that number doesn't surprise me because I think having Joel back there, having, you know, Ben, I think, has always been really good on ball and has even gotten arguably better. But off ball, I think he's also taken, you know, if not a step forward this year, at least in the last couple of years, has been much more disruptive, just kind of roaming. And Matisse is absolutely the same way. I mean, Matisse played zone in college. Not that he can't play man, but I think that, you know, both of them can guard both on and off the ball. And so you're having, you know, them getting into passing lanes, not being afraid to get into passing lanes because Joel's back there. And they're so disrupted defensively that it's leading to a lot of easy hoops. That lineup is going to absolutely have to be part of the playoff rotation. And I know that, both of us were skeptical about Matisse and what he could do coming into the season, but he is, I mean, it'd be an understatement to say he's proven us wrong. He's been incredible. And his shot's been a little better, but I don't even think that's the biggest thing. I think just how great he's been defensively compared to how, you know, he was good last year and great for a rookie, but he's just so excellent right now. And those lineups are creating easy offense. And I think that's a big part of why they've been so successful.
Right. I mean, honestly, I think about that with Dwight too, in that offensively, he's a very narrow player, you know, as Matisse.
And hilarious.
The way that Matisse can get steals and blocks and generate runouts on the other end, and the same way that Dwight gets offensive rebounds and gets fouled, and sure, he does some fouling of his own, but I think that's also very valuable to the team's offense.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Speaking of, you know, we're talking about sort of net ratings and different matchups with guys together or pairings. Somebody named Gordon Mack tweeted at Daryl Morey this, and he retweeted it. This is basically the two-star duos around the league and who has the best net rating. And the Sixers have the best net rating. It's Embiid and Simmons at 15.4. It's right above Leonard and George, who are at 15.3. And then you get to LeBron and AD at 14.6. And then, you know, so on and so forth down the line there. That's pretty remarkable. I mean, I knew that they were playing well together, and sort of the cynic in me just sort of says that Joel with anybody is a great lineup because Joel is that good. But I think there is really something to be said for the two of them on the court playing together and knowing how to navigate each other's strengths and weaknesses. Are you surprised to know that Embiid and Simmons are that high on this sort of list?
I guess I would say I'm not surprised just because of how well the Sixers have played this year.
Yeah.
And we've seen them be fine together before. I think that, you know, when we talk about potential Simmons trades, which I obviously, right, this second is not worth talking about. They'll be going into the offseason with him and through the playoffs with him. But I still think, you know, Daryl, you know, we know, you know, Keith reported Ben was offered. And as stars come available, I don't think it's crazy to think that, you know, Ben will, you know, will be thrown around in trade talks. I'm not saying he'll be moved. But for you know, a higher tier star, you know, Ben's an all-star, but I'm talking, you know, a Harden slash maybe even, you know, if we're lucky enough, Curry becomes available type player. But that being said, I don't think that that is reflective of him really being a bad fit with Joel. And we've talked about this before. I think the bigger thing is that, you know, the Sixers kind of lack a guy who can score from three levels and initiate from the perimeter, which is, you know, what you think of when you think of a lot of the stars today. When you think of a lot of contenders today, they're built around that type of player. And Ben just being the, you know, the next best player on the team besides their one true superstar is basically the obvious guy you put in those talks. But there, there's a lot of ways they're good together. I mean, Ben's a very good passer. And after suffering through watching, you know, Josh Richardson trying to throw inbounds passes to Joel Embiid, you know,
into passes
into the post last season, you know, it's really helps you to appreciate, and even JJ, it helps you to appreciate, you know, what you're getting with Ben and that he's, you know, able to initiate the offense in you know, a large capacity, but, you know, he's not going to score for himself in the way other guys can, who can also do that, which is why it comes up. But they're still a good fit. They're still really important, I think, to each other's success, especially Joel to Ben's, but even, you know, to, I guess, a lesser degree, but not much of a lesser degree, Ben to Joel. I think they, you know, as the by far two best players, I guess, you know, Tobias has been better this season, but over the last few years, by far the Sixers' two best players, they definitely have learned to play together. They've learned to play to each other's strengths and cover each other's weaknesses. And defensively, they're incredible together. So I guess it's not shocking because I think they are, you know, they fit well, well enough. If only they had this extra guy is basically what I feel. But then again, if they go deep in the playoffs, and we've talked about this, then they're going to build around this core. And I don't think that that would be a mistake. I think that that would be if Ben proves he can be better in the playoffs, and Tobias proves he can be better in the playoffs, and they prove that they can, you know, run an offense through Joel in the playoffs and avoid, you know, the difficulties that, you know, even the Raptors showed this year when you just double Joel hard. And if they can overcome all that, then it makes sense that if these three are going to be this good, they're worth another season, you know, to see what they can do. So I guess that's a long answer to say, I guess I'm not shocked because they've been so good this year and those two guys are a huge part of it.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things. You talk about their fit and defensively, you know, what a lot of – this is not breaking news, but a lot of high-level initiators in the league who are stars want to run the pick and roll, want to create out of the pick and roll, want to get their own shot out of the pick and roll. And a lot of times the person setting that pick is the other team's center, the biggest guy. And when teams try to do that with the Sixers, Ben is guarding the best perimeter player and Joel is guarding the center. And it's just hell for other teams to attack a Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid guarded pick and roll. I think that, you know, the way that they can impact the defense on that end and when they're really locked in, and it seems like Mike O'Connor just wrote something for the Rights of Ricky Sanchez website about, you know, the changes that the Sixers have made on the defensive end. And I feel like it is really showed, you know, how much better they can be and how sort of disruptive those two guys can be. And I think that's very exciting. And, you know, it's good to see Ben sort of play the way that he has played. It will really matter in the playoffs. You know, when Daryl came in, I feel like the main thing that he embraced was that you don't need to trade essentially Ben right now. And they don't, you know, they shouldn't feel under the gun, you need to trade Ben right now. You know, if you had a Embiid sort of trade request or worry from his camp, or if the team lost 20 in a row, or if the team was not improving, then you feel like you might have to. But for me, it's like, you know, I don't think when you talk about the top stars in the league that Ben should be untouchable in any way. But they certainly don't need to put him on the trade block at any point right now, you know. If they flame out in the postseason, that's sort of another conversation. But right now, Ben has been great, and it does seem like their sort of connectivity on offense and just on the court together is growing. And I'm happy to see that because that's really what's been leading them to a lot of good play. today, as we're recording this, at midnight is sort of the deadline for when guys who are free agents or bought out can sign with the team and be part of the team come the playoffs. What do you think about that? Actually, you know what? We've got a new, never mind. A guy came in here and requested to speak and then left. Okay, been there. I get it. What do you think about that sort of thing? Buyout guys. Are you looking for anything? Do you feel like the Sixers need to add a body? I mean, both of us would certainly like Daryl to be able to replace the Mike Scott minutes. But what do you think about that? Do you have your eye on anyone in particular on this last day of potential playoff additions?
No, I don't think the Sixers are going to be big in the buyout market this year. It really seems like, you know, all the big guys are going to go to one of the LA teams or they're going to go to Brooklyn. We've kind of seen that already to start with. And I'm fine with it. I don't think the Sixers have any huge holes. I think that, you know, my biggest concern with them is that their second and third best players are, in my view, far worse than the second and third best players in Brooklyn. And that's my concern with them. It's not how the roster is built. You know, I don't think backup center is a huge need like everyone says it is. And I think that George Hill, you know, obviously much more than any buyout guy will, addressed as best that the Sixers could the issue with, you know, a guy besides Ben who can run the offense. So there's not anything big I'm looking for. I don't think that the Scott minutes, I could easily be wrong about this. And we know that Doc can be a little bit stubborn with his lineups in the past. I really hope I'm right when I'm saying I don't think the Mike Scott minutes will be minutes that exist come playoff time.
Right.
I truly hope that, you know, we have our starting five, and then we have Shake, George Hill, Matisse, and Dwight, and, you know, those nine playing some combination of the bench minutes, and that's it in the playoffs.
Right. So maybe like 5 minutes for Korkmaz if you need a shot, something like that.
And that would just be situational. But
right.
But in terms of the guys you're going to see every game, I would hope you're not seeing any more than that. So I'm not super concerned about the buyout market. I don't think we'll see the Sixers do anything, you know, truly exciting, but I think that's fine. I don't think that, you know, they're not a team like, you know, Brooklyn's super top heavy. And your concern with them was, you know, can they get enough guys? So the buyout market's huge for them. I think the Sixers are basically the opposite, whereas, you know, not that the bench is like anything incredible, but they have enough solid bench players that, you know, they have four guys, arguably five, coming off the bench that are better than any buyout guy they're going to get. And the concern is really more with the top end guys that the buyout market is not addressing anyway. I guess, you know, situationally, the one thing you could ask for is, and I agree with your take, you know, largely that they don't need a stretch five. But, yeah. But you know, if they could get a guy for nothing on the buyout market who could, you know, in a very specific spot, give you that type of minutes, you know, I think that would be, you know, helpful. I don't think that'll necessarily happen, and I definitely don't think it's a huge deal if it.
No, and really, like, for me, I'd like them to add somebody like that just to get through the rest of the regular season. I mean, you know, assuming that Joel doesn't play every single game, which I think we probably shouldn't, just given
right
what
and Dwight's going to get ejected from like three more.
Dwight's going to get tossed, which I love. I think that it would probably be nice to have another, just any other actual center on the roster so that they don't have to play Scott and so that they can give a different look. I would love that. I just feel like anybody that we can get at this point will not be effective enough overall to play in the playoffs. You know, that's just, I just don't think so. We do have a question in the chat here from friend of the podcast, Remy. He said, if there is no acquisition today, can they sign some 10-day contracts or something like that later on, or does it mean the roster can't be updated anymore? My understanding, Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that they can still do 10-day contracts. They can still do that sort of stuff. Those guys, they just can't have anybody else new in the playoffs. But
Harrison's very good with these rules, if you want to ask him if he wants.
Harrison Grimm, yes, of Liberty Ball, is in the chat or is listening in. So, Harrison, if you know a little bit more about that, I'd love to have you sort of substantiate or give us some new information on that. My understanding is that they could add a 10-day or two along the way, but they just couldn't have those guys for the playoffs from here on out. So anyway, we're winding down a little bit here, and Harrison, you can let us know if you're if you want to chime in. We'd be happy to have you. Going into this Pelicans game, is there anybody else that you'd be worried about for the Pelicans as the Sixers get ready to play them tonight? You know, there's of course Ingram and Lonzo are questionable. Josh Hart, you know, is there anybody else that you think could really be a thorn in the Sixers side tonight as they try to get a win on the road?
Well, Hart's out. Hart's hurt. But yeah, Lonzo and Ingram are obviously, you know, they're two next best players. I guess, you know, you could argue, or I still really like Bledsoe a lot. No one worries me. I guess, you know, if someone worries me, it would definitely be Zion. I think he's incredible. But I don't think that there's any guy that, and, you know, guys get hot because it's the NBA and they're all incredible. But there's no one I'm looking at ahead of time, like, you know, how are the Sixers going to handle them? Or, you know, like on either end of the ball, I think that the Sixers are, you know, the Sixers have their record for a reason, and the Pelicans are where they are for a reason, which is not to say that they're not a solid team that's capable of beating the Sixers, but it just to say that I don't see anyone as a particular, you know, threat. I don't think that they're, you know, loaded with, you know, extremely good players. I think that Zion is the guy that I'm worried about. And if we lose, which I don't really think we will, especially with them having guys who may be out, I think that it's going to be because Zion is extremely hard to guard and he had a great game. And I think that, you know, in this type of game, a lot, you know, he's so dominant and so different that if something, you know, if I guess, you know, in the NBA, if you can even call it an upset in one game when anyone can really win. But if there were that kind of upset to happen, I think that it's really just going to be.
Yeah. You know, looking forward, the Sixers have a scheduled game tomorrow, Saturday night against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and not Al Horford, who has been banned from playing in Oklahoma City, which is just a sort of wonderful storyline this year. Do you expect Joel to play the back-to-back? Obviously, there's some, you know, variance that might happen if they play in overtime tonight and Joe plays 40 minutes. I'm sure they won't have him. But assuming it's a regular game where he plays around 30 minutes, would you expect Joel to play tomorrow? Or do you think that probably given, you know, his recent comeback, that they keep him out of this back-to-back? What do you think?
I think they play him. I guess, you know, my prediction was that he sat out one coming in. But if there's nothing really happens, I mean, and you know, he got through the Celtics game fine. And you know, as we come in, yes, it's a back-to-back. And yes, he sat out the last back-to-back. But I don't think they want to, you know, take too much time with him. I don't think that they, you know, they want to ramp him up a little bit. But he does. First of all, he wants to play. He's always wanted to play. And Emily's talked a lot about this, where it's just like, you know, he's getting to the point where, you know, you've asked him to get in better shape. And he's finally in better shape. You know, he's gotten himself to a point where, you know, he can play these back-to-backs. And he's, you know, he's an adult. He's 27 years old. And if he says he can play, obviously the team has to be protective of him. But he also is at a point where if there's not a true injury, and yes, he's coming back from injury, but he's not necessarily injured anymore, that he's going to have to make some of these decisions for himself. And he should be allowed to. So I think, you know, he's going to want to play, and I think that they will let him play because in the playoffs, there's no back-to-backs, but, you know, it's a fight, and it's more half-court, which means more offense through Joel, and Joel's going to be, you know, somewhat worn down, and they want to build him up to that. They were building him up to that before. We saw it before. He was playing more back-to-backs than he had been, and I think that that's going to continue. I think that the first back-to-back was because it was, you know, the very first game after he came back, where it would have to be an initial back to back. But I think they want him just back to what he was basically as quickly.
Yeah, you know, and Joel has talked in the past about how when he sits for a long period of time, he has a hard time staying fully in shape when he's not playing basketball, which I get. You know, a lot of NBA players will talk about it, how much you can work out, but it really doesn't compare to playing up and down on the court. So I definitely think that he wants to play. Not to mention that I'm sure that it's not lost on him that he's got a shot at this MVP, you know, even if it's an outside shot, but if he makes a great run at it at the end of the year. And I think he, as he should, wants the first seed. You know, if the Sixers were able to eke out that first seed in the East, then they get to avoid both Milwaukee and the Nets until a potential Eastern Conference final. Of course, you have to get there. But if, you know, if they're in the second seed, then they would have to play likely the Bucks before then. So we'll see. You know, after the Celtics game, this is from Rich Hoffman of The Athletic. He said that Doc Rivers said about Joel Embiid walking out, he said, "I'm back." And I said, "Yeah, I noticed," which just really sounds like something from Fast and the Furious, like that Vin Diesel would say to Tyrese. And I just really enjoy it. Buddy, do you have anything else? The Sixers played the Pelicans. We both feel pretty good about this one and just hope they get a win and come out healthy. You good?
I'm good. I guess, you know, one thing I just want to add is just that, you know, Joel has, you know, like you just said, he's back. And the Celtics game was so much fun, not just because they beat the Celtics, which is always fun, not just because they won in Boston, which is always tough to do, no matter how kind of, you know, basically Boston's kind of having a pathetic season, which is awesome. And I love it, but right. It's still a great win to win in Boston. But on top of that, Joel being back, and I don't just mean playing, but like just dominating and giving our biggest rival fits, was so amazing to watch. And I missed him terribly while he was gone. I missed, you know, getting to watch him almost every other night. And I'm so excited that he's back now. I get excited for most games, but especially games when Joel's playing. So, you know, just really excited for tonight in that regard, on top of the, you know, Joel being back, which I'm still in the process of appreciating, plus, you know, hopefully Ben guarding Zion, which should be a ton of fun. It should be a really fun game.
Yeah. I mean, we were texting about this, but it doesn't matter what the Celtics record is, beating the Celtics will always be especially satisfying.
Absolutely.
And thrilled that Joel is back and healthy. And most of all, thrilled for our buddy Emily, who is now a married woman. So, we send all of our love and happiness to them, and we hope that they have a great weekend. Dan and I will be back with you on we have one last question. David Rose here in the chat. Dan, do you have time for a buzzer beater here?
Yeah, real quick. So basically the only update we have is that he has said that he will definitely be back before the playoffs.
So David asked about any insights when George Hill will make his question? Debut.
Nope, that's on
nope,
me.
Not yet.
That's on me. sorry, I'm just enjoying my Friday with some White Claws. But
you're good.
Yeah, it's a good question. Right now, you know, they had a press conference the other day. I know Tom West got some good quotes from it from Liberty Ballers. And basically Hill and Doc both talked. And the main takeaway is there's really no timetable on Hill, but Hill says he'll definitely be back before the playoffs, which, you know, for anyone who's been following the Sixers medical, I guess, you know, record over the last few years, that is extremely not reassuring that we don't have a time and that, you know, it'll be in, you know, definitely by a month or so. I didn't love hearing that. I'm not going to panic about it. The team's still been really good, and I'm excited to see Hill. But for now, we definitely don't know when he will make his debut, and we don't know when we even will know. They didn't even give us like a, he'll be reevaluated in a week, he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. We're just kind of waiting at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Hill sort of hinted at that the last 4 or 5 days have been very good and ramping up in his activity. And there are videos, friend of the podcast, Keith Pompey, has a few Zapruder films of him shooting on the court, which is good to see. And I feel like we'll just wait and see. But from everything that we're reading, he'll certainly be ready for the playoffs and should have a few games under his belt before that. But it's always the Sixers, so you never know. Congratulations, Emily and Jordy. Thank you guys for listening in here on Locker Room. We are going to be back with you, just Dan and I, solo or duo, who cares, on Sunday. That episode will be out Monday morning. We thank you guys for
listening.
Emily's
not going to be on that one?
I don't think so, buddy. I think she's in marital bliss. She won't be around.
Oh, good for her. She deserves
good for her is right. All right, so I'll talk to you on Sunday, and that episode will be out Monday. Thank you guys for listening and hanging out.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Congrats, Emily. Love you.
See you.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.